the Supreme. You just wait. And that's his method. So these are, he says, are the two spirits, his two gurus, the bumblebee and the python, but from which he learns two things, renunciation and satisfaction with whatever comes of its own accord. So now he's describing, in the material world, sometimes he's lying on the ground, sometimes he's on soft pillows and white sheets, and sometimes he's like a king on an elephant, sometimes he travels naked like a ghostly haunted person. This is the career of the living entity in different bodies. He's going all these different places in the material world. Sometimes up, sometimes down, sometimes a movie star, sometimes a tapeworm. In a movie star. So in this way, people are meeting different careers. And he says here, and it's all the same to me. It's really all the same to me. Because I see Sababa Vishamamjanam, people, they have different attitudes. They have different mentalities. But he says, I neither blaspheme nor I praise. They look all the same. So in the material world, there's good and there's bad. According to what gratifies our senses and what doesn't gratify our senses. Here the two basic mentalities are that big division for those people who are progressively advancing materially. In Vedic culture, that means going to the higher planets, within the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, elevating themselves materially, performing pious activities, restricting their sense gratification to certain lawful ways, so that they will be elevated to the heavenly planets. Others make mistakes, they have a different mentality, they go down to hellish planets. He says, but really, it's all the same, as far as he's concerned. So in the material world, you have this good and you have bad. It's good to get a job, earn money, be responsible, get a decent bank balance, take care of many people, become respectable. And it's bad to be a street person sleeping on a grate and all that other stuff. But on the one hand, what are these people doing who are going to taking care and being responsible? They're also homeless. Everybody in the material world is homeless. And even on the material platform, the most responsible person is leading an irresponsible life of sense gratification. Because what will he achieve? They all rotate within the material world of birth and death. So from the spiritual perspective, there's not so big a difference. From some people's perspective, there may be a big difference. But for those people who are spiritual, we don't see. In different circles, sometimes controversy is raging. Is it best to execute people by the electric chair or by the gas chamber? So to some people, this is a big controversy. But to others, you know, what's the difference? So Prabhupada gave the example that in the material world, there's good and bad. So sometimes you may make a distinction that a stool on the road, sometimes it's wet and sometimes it's dry. And when it's wet and you step in it, it's very nasty. But if it's dry, it's not so troublesome. So you can say, oh, this is dry stool, that's nice, and this is wet stool, that's bad. But after all, it's all stool. So in the material world, the nicest things are dry stool. So it doesn't make any big difference. So from the perspective of someone like this saintly person, this Brahmana, who's interested in liberation from the material world, all this concern with good and bad in the material world, it doesn't seem like such a big thing. So this discrimination that people are making between material good and material bad, the real discrimination should be between, on the one hand, people who are making judgments about what is good and bad in the material world, and those who are transcendentalists. So in the material world, we can lump it all together. It's all bad. It's all bad. Some are high, some are low, some are this way, some are that way. Some are going up to the higher planetary system, some are going down to the lower, but they're all trapped within samsara, birth and death in the material world. He said, so Prabhupada says, people of different mentalities are sometimes elevated and sometimes degraded, but this is not the goal of life. As long as one is in the material world, whatever goes up comes down. And whatever goes down will go up again. So people are just spending so much time and effort just to go around like a bunch of kids on a merry-go-round and to no more purpose than just to keep going around. So they're wasting their time. All of them are irresponsible, no matter how responsible they may be. Rather, the goal of life is to become free from elevation and degradation and take to Krishna consciousness. This is called freedom from duality. Dvandva mohena. One is captivated by the illusion or the delusion of duality. And that duality is, this is good, this is bad. This gratifies my senses, this doesn't gratify my senses. Wealth is good, poverty is bad. Fame is good, infamy is bad. Whatever, there are so many things. This is good, this is bad. And they're coming to us all the time. Something is good and something is bad. But one who is actually in Krishna consciousness looks at them both as identical. He packs up this good and bad together and say it's one thing and it's all not worth even bothering about. So all the time in the Bhagavad Gita, the description of a Krishna conscious person, it says he's not elated when something good happens. Something that is to say, you win the lottery, you come into money, you get famous, you know, whatever happens in the material world that's good, you're not elated when something so-called good happens and not downcast when something bad happens. Otherwise, people are being batted around, bang, bang, back and forth, good, bad, good, bad. They wake up, the weather's nice, they're happy, the weather turns bad, they're sad. And all the time, mood swings back and forth. Just based on whatever circumstance is there. Somebody calls, they're happy. Somebody doesn't call, they're unhappy. Somebody doesn't call, they're happy. Somebody calls, they're unhappy. You know. And the happiness and distress depends on all these exterior circumstances in which they're caught up. And of course they're trying their pitiful best to control it. But it's beyond everybody's control. And nobody can do much of anything about it in the long run. Actually, of course, Prahlad Maharaj tells us you can't change it. How much good and bad you get in this life is already set up. Just as, you know, your brown hair and blue eyes or whatever comes with the body, so does actually a script, a life script, of so much dose of good and so much dose of bad. And astrologers, if they know what they're doing, can tell you what it is, because it's already predetermined by one's past pious and friendly activities. Look at the chart. You'll never be happily married. You'll never have money. Say, it'll say something like that, you know. And that's a fact. Or you'll have money. If it's there, if by your past pious activities you're going to have money, you'll get money. You don't have to do much of anything. And if you're down for the starvation treatment, keep trying and you won't change. You won't change. And you can't. This is what Prahlad Maharaj says. And he gives evidence for this. Not just that you have to accept it on, you know, this Oriental fatalism. Because if you, the propaganda is, if you believe this, that is, if you believe in karma, then you're going to do nothing to better yourself. We're just going to sit around, you know, and just like dumb animals, take whatever things instead of running bulldozers everywhere and cranes and developing ourselves. But Prahlad points out that it's actually a fact. Because he points out how distress comes of its own accord. Now you'll notice that you're doing everything to make arrangements, and yet out of its own, distress comes. Something bad happens. You're not working for it, you're trying to get away from it, but disease happens, relationships break off, financial failure takes place, all by itself. All by itself. So unhappiness just comes of its own accord. Right? This we have seen. Nobody has to work for it. Nobody has to make an endeavor. It just comes. Now, what he's saying is that happiness, we're talking about material happiness, but happiness works on the exact same principle. It comes of its own accord and goes away of its own accord. Why should it be any different? So there's these two things, happiness and distress. So in the same way that distress comes all by its lonesome, without anybody trying to cultivate it, so happiness comes the same way. And is being dealt out to us by Daiva, the superior arrangement of the universal controlling system on the basis of our good and our bad karma, our past pious and sinful activities. And at this point, once you take birth, you can't do too much to change it. You can affect future lives. But this life, it's pretty much, you just have to play out the script. This is a fact. And people, it's interesting that over the last year I started to get some association through ISKCON Foundation and efforts with people who have made their fortunes, usually Indian people who started out poor and ended up very rich. The extraordinary thing is, and they all tell you their stories, you know, like devotees tell stories, how they came to Krishna consciousness, they'll tell stories about how they got their money. Any person who suddenly comes, they have a story to tell. And what I've noticed about the story is there's always an accident. There's always a coincidence that is at the root of their thing. Just like one gentleman told me that the story, he had a little shop in New York, and he was selling cotton shirts he imported from India. It was just like a little shop. He was a shopkeeper. And he had one assistant, and that's what he did. He's a very small-time guy. And one day he was going to go leave early and leave his assistant in charge. And for some reason he just decided to hang around a little bit more. And a man came into his store and looked at his goods and started talking to him. And they struck up a conversation and got fairly friendly. And the man said to him, look, I'd like to place a fairly big order for some shirts. And the guy said, oh yeah. He thought, well, this is good, I stage. You know, he's thinking the guy's going to order a dozen shirts. He wanted 30,000. He was a buyer for JCPenney's. And he said, you know, I like your product, but most I really like you, and I really trust you, and you're the person, kind of person I want to deal with. And from then on, the man's fortune was one thing led to another, you know. Just because he happened to be in his shop. A coincidence, an accident. Now, how do you make a coincidence? How do you make an accident? You know, they just happened. So there it was. This kind of thing goes on. And you can do everything else, you can work hard, but if you don't have that little coincidence, you don't have that little happenstance, that accident, you know, it never works. You know? So, that's already arranged. So Prahlad Maharaj says, look, don't even worry about it. Just, you know, just take whatever's going to happen, come of its own accord. Endure the distress. Endure the happiness also, and put your energy into Krishna consciousness. That's what he says. You really can't change the balance. Put your energy into Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time spinning your wheels, he says, because the happiness and distress, it's already going to pretty much come. And when one becomes a devotee, then everything becomes good. If you're a materialist, happiness and distress, it's all distress. Even the best happiness in the material world is distress, because it makes you think, oh, this is a nice place. This material world is wonderful. That means you're going to really suffer. When we think that, that's the worst distress, actually, just down the line. So just as for a non-devotee, everything in the material world, happiness and distress, it's ultimately distress. But for a devotee, everything in the material world, happiness and distress, is happiness. Because when one becomes a devotee, the material energy starts to work with respect to him in a different way. That is, the material energy starts to work in such a way as to bring about his release. Formally, the material energy is bringing about bondage. But if one is actually situated in Krishna consciousness, then one will discover that whatever happens by the arrangement of the material energy, whether it's happiness material on a material platform or distress on a material platform, it's all good, because it helps us to advance in Krishna consciousness. So it may be that after I become a devotee, by the will of Krishna, I shall remain poverty-stricken. But I will see that poverty is good. I will see it as the most wonderful thing, because by that poverty, I advance in Krishna consciousness. And if I become a devotee and money comes, I will see that's a good thing, because by that money, I will advance in Krishna consciousness. Either one will work, depending on who I am or what my circumstances are. And Krishna knows best what I need. So everything starts to work in a different way. So whatever comes on the material platform, for a devotee, it's all good. Because all of it helps him or her become spiritually advanced. And so such a person who's actually situated in Krishna consciousness, this good and bad, this auspicious and inauspicious, good fortune, bad fortune, happiness and distress in the material world, he doesn't think it very significant. And like this person, he says people are different mentalities. Some are going up, some are going down. Some are very rich, some are very poor. Some are working hard to make money, some are just helpless. And he sees them. He doesn't praise them or blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare. So their welfare is they have to get out of the system. of good and bad in this material world. That's their welfare. As long as anyone is remaining in the material world, no matter how good things become, he's in the material world. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, certified by the Creator as temporary and miserable. It will never be anything but temporary and miserable because it's made temporary and made miserable. That's what it'll be. You'll never create the permanent place of happiness within this material world. It's just not there. It only exists in the minds of advertising agents. Otherwise, it's simply not there. We have to be convinced of this. The real goal of life, why? When the human life can deliver the greatest value, and to take that human life and to use it for some temporary material happiness is the most tragic waste that there is. It's a gross misuse. And every human being can get out of his human form so much, and people are trading it in for so little, for just a few cheap thrills, and then they die. And whether they're a few cheap thrills is sitting on a doorstep shooting heroin or cocaine, or whether they're a few cheap thrills is running an empire, it's all just a few cheap thrills. That's all. In both cases, it's a wasted life. So we're telling people here, don't waste your life. Engage yourself in Krishna consciousness. And be like here. You should understand. You have to be compassionate not only on the poor, but also on the rich. Because both of them are poor. They don't have Krishna consciousness. So any questions? Comments? Yeah?
You say how devotees see access getting bad and saved and fall dead. Sometimes a devotee might feel like his clients were vegetarian, vegan, and like equal for life draft, for the
Well, in one sense, it depends on how it's seen. From a Krishna conscious point of view, we encourage people to become vegetarian. But not just vegetarian, to honor Krishna prasadam. There's times when somebody's come to Prabhupada and announced they were vegetarians, and Prabhupada pointed out that monkeys are too. And there's no particular, if you're a vegetarian and still rotating in the cycle of birth and death, then that's not much use either. So again, it's good and bad on the material platform. But it also can be conducive toward Krishna consciousness. So if it's conducive toward Krishna consciousness, then we can accept it. So you can encourage people to be vegetarian, but in the same breath you have to encourage them to offer everything to Krishna. Now come to a higher platform. And the purpose of dealing with vegetarian things or promoting vegetarianism is that you can have a group of people that might be also sympathetic to Krishna consciousness. At least that's the hope. And so also there's the big debate, abortion. Of course abortion is greatly sinful. It's murder. That should be pointed out to people. They shouldn't perform these sinful activities. But then, if you start to look at it, you know, given the present circumstances. What are all the people the so-called anti-abortion people, they don't also have much of a practical solution to the problem. They don't have, what you notice in a debate like this in the material platform is nobody answers anybody else's objections, you know. Like, so the people who want legalized abortion, their big objection is everybody's going to do it anyway, and you're just going to have, you know, these back alley abortions, and the mortality rate is going to go so high. And I don't see that anybody ever addresses that question. They just ignore it and say it's murder. And people on the other side ignore that part, you know, and so on. But there's no answer to this question, because, of course, what is going to happen if you make abortion illegal is that people are still going to be having abortions, because the mentality is the same. It's a fact. You'll probably just, you know, not decrease the number of abortions. That's probably a fact. You'll probably not decrease the number of abortions, or only by a little bit, and it'll probably be a lot more deadly, and encourage many, many people to break the law. That's what's going to happen. It's just like when, you know, you would think it was a good thing when, what was it, the 19th Prohibition Amendment was passed? In the United States, one amendment to the Constitution. They amended the Constitution to make alcohol illegal in the United States. They actually did it. Everyone was so pious. And they thought this was such a scourge. You know, they were so advanced that everybody voted to make alcohol illegal for everybody else. Because the immediate thing was is that it didn't decrease by a huge, there was some decrease, but most people went on drinking. And they just had all made arrangements for illegal whiskey, so that way they could satisfy their virtue. So it's the kind of thing, yeah, we would have supported, something like that. Anything that's good for the regular principles is good for the good for Krishna consciousness. But because the mentality, because there was no development of a higher taste, and so on. So unless people actually become converted to this program, that the goal of life is self-realization, then all these other things are just going to create more problems. That's why, you know, in this big abortion, anti-abortion debate, except from using it as a platform to preach Krishna consciousness, otherwise, you know, we tend not to get involved. Because it's really on the material platform. Nobody likes abortion. We tell people it's murder, it's a sinful activity, and so on. But no one hopes that that when Roe versus Wade is overturned and legal abortions become difficult to get, that that's really going to decrease the amount of illicit sex. And that's even going to decrease the amount of abortions by that much. That'll be interesting if that actually happens, because the mentality is not there. Change the mentality. So these things, vegetarianism, sub-religious principles, they can be encouraged as a way to come to Krishna consciousness. But if it ends without coming to Krishna consciousness, then we're not so much interested.
In the argument, some people bring it up against karma, or just a question I have too. Okay, so our whole life is completely predestined. So, let's see. Say in the temple, you and I want to try to eat a healthy diet, or eat a junk food diet, eat halva all day. Well, what's the difference if our pain and suffering is already, you know, what if I just eat halva all day? What about, you know,
that's because your destiny is to be sick, and therefore it's in your mind to eat halva all day.
Yeah,
It doesn't really. You know, one has to make responsible choices and do the best thing and try to take care of my health and all this other stuff. But don't think that that's going to control everything. That's all. So generally, one should take cares to stay healthy and try to avoid unhealth and this and that and the other thing. But because the outcome of may be determined, that doesn't mean, you know, if you knew what it was, you know, then maybe you could go ahead, well, you know, I'm going to be sick anyway, I might as well eat halal. Oh, I'm going to be healthy, that's for sure. I might as well, eat halava. In either case, I can eat halava. You don't know what you don't know. So the idea is you do the responsible thing. That one should do. Somebody's sick, you go to a physician. The outcome, you know, is not entirely on the hands of the physician, but still, you act in a responsible way. Okay. Yeah.
Still on that issue of abortion, other kinds of Christian conscious concerns.
Well, they're not. It depends whether they're Krishna conscious or not. That's really the question.
Well, there are a lot of political candidates, and sometimes it's kind of mixed in terms of what their charity is and what their values are.
Yeah.
So it's better not to vote with friends with somebody for abortion, but there are also things that we might be for.
We are a non-profit religious organization. We can't endorse political candidates. So sitting here, I can't... I can't tell you that Senator Wofford spent time in India in the Peace Corps and is very
serious. Okay, I went to Akron the other day.
I vote. There are practical reasons for voting. In other words, especially locally. Because then if our local city councilman understands that there's 20 voters in this temple, then they'll be nice. We want to, do something, be a little more favorable toward Krishna consciousness. But that's not anything to do with ideology. It has to do with politics. So in Mayapur, all the devotees vote.
The reason I asked is, I was in the Acme a few weeks ago, and I was stuck at a local center of the house, and she went. She signed a petition for the delegate. And I also had I had been suggested to my friends who were going to show her a proposal I was writing, a teacher in school. So I was talking to her about it, that was the year they were complaining, and she said, sure, come to my office, would you sign a petition? And so I was thinking outside of the petition, and the thought popped in my head, what are your views on abortion?
Well, I know what hers are.
So I asked her, sorry, I can't sign it. Uh-huh.
Well, it's all right. You can be pious if you want, but just don't put a whole lot of store in it. We'll get you out of the material world.
But in terms of voting or supporting candidates, I should have those concerns.
Yeah, you can. It's the pro-abortion Democrats who are nicer to the Hare Krishnas. The liberal, pro-feminist, pro-gay rights, pro-abortion, pro-Hare Krishna. You know, we're just another deviation out there to be tolerated. Whereas the Republicans, with their family values and their anti-abortions, they're the ones that are going to burn us at the stake. Just a little political wisdom. This is sort of paradoxical, isn't it? Yeah.
You were saying answering Raghunath's question about the doing the response. So here's a theoretical situation. It's a Grihastha with responsibilities. Mm-hmm. He sees those responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And maybe he reaches some state of advancement. where he feels a little more inclined to this Python method.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he doesn't go all the way, and maybe he wants to spend more time doing regular sudden and less time
Sure.
How do you well?
It's no problem. Just get his wife to agree. Then you can go ahead. Family lives will be peaceful. That's why it says the husband and wife should be of the same mentality. Or the wife should be such that she accepts the vows of the husband. But that is a responsible household way of living. In fact, it's in this very chapter, the four spiritual classes describes the means of livelihood that brahmanas can do. And that's what you do. That's one method, practically speaking. Just taking whatever somebody brings you, or else going around to where they thresh the rice and picking up the leftover rice that's fallen to the rain side. Methods like that. That's perfectly responsible. As I said, just get your wife. Don't drink to it. Anything else? I'll go as to see the problem.